It was late in the afternoon, but not yet time to head for the Marshall's house for supper. The kid stopped at a general store to pick up a few supplies and replenish his stock of ammunition. The proprietor got a box of .44-40s off the shelf.
Well, you're the fellow who killed those outlaws and saved all the money from the bank earlier today, aren't you?
It wasn't exactly like that. The marshal had a bigger hand in stopping them than I did. And the way I heard it, they never actually made it out of the bank with any money.
Well, Henry Bennett put the word out that if you wanted anything, we should just send the bill for it over to him. So, you don't owe me anything for these goods, Mr. Browning.
All right. I'm obliged. Say, you wouldn't know a man by the name of McCall, would you?
McCall. No, can't say as I do. A friend of yours?
Not really. Just somebody I ran into, and I thought he might have come through here.
Well, lots of people come through Las Vegas and never give their names to anybody. He might even have bought supplies from me without me knowing who he was. What's he look like?
Never mind. It doesn't matter. Where's the post office?
Well, you're looking at it. I'm the postmaster here, too. It's after operating hours, but if you got something you need to mail, you can give it to me, and I'll make sure it goes out in the mailbag on the train day after tomorrow.
Thanks. Have you got a little box of some kind and some paper to wrap it up with?
The storekeeper provided the supplies. The kid stepped to a corner for some privacy and put the envelope with the picture in it and the roll of greenbacks into the box. He tore the flap with the address off the envelope, then wrapped up the package, tied it with string, and used a pencil to print the address on the outside. After paying the postage, the kid took his supplies and ammunition and left the store. He had done what he promised himself he would do. His debt to the dead bounty hunter, if such there really was, had been discharged. He stowed the goods in his saddlebags and led the buckskin toward the middle of the settlement, heading to the marshal's house. He was aware that many of the people he passed were watching him. Loafers sitting in chairs on the front porch of the hotel passed low-voiced comments back and forth. He knew they were talking about the shootout in front of the bank. Short of collecting a bullet, things couldn't have worked out much worse for him. The last thing he'd wanted when he rode into Las Vegas was attention, and that was practically all he'd gotten. He led the buckskin around the marshal's office and tied the horse to a scrubby tree in the little yard in front of the house. When he knocked on the door, Fairmont answered. The marshal still wore his gun belt, but he had a pipe in his hand and looked more relaxed.
So, you showed up. You might as well come in.
The kid took off his hat as he went inside. Fairmont used the pipe stem to point at a hook on the wall where he could hang the Stetson and ushered the visitor into a nicely furnished parlor.
You want a drink? I got a bottle of brandy, but I don't break into it very often.
No, that's fine. Thanks.
You get your telegram sent?
Yes, I did. I'm just waiting for a reply now. I hope it's all right. I told the telegrapher I was having supper here. He's supposed to send a boy with the reply if it comes in.
Sure, that's fine. You still plan on riding out as soon as you hear back from whoever you sent that wire to?
Well, not this late. I suppose I'll spend the night at the hotel.
No, it's a comfortable place, or so I'm told. And now I've been thinking that I've seen you before.
Before today, you mean?
Yeah.
It's possible. I've been a lot of places.
Yeah, but I got a good memory for faces. It'll come to me.
Food's ready. Come to supper.
The food tasted as good as it smelled. Roast beef, potatoes, greens, some of the lightest and best-tasting biscuits the kid had ever eaten, followed by peach cobbler for dessert. It was a simple meal, but as fine as any Conrad Browning had ever had in those fancy restaurants back east. The company was a damn sight better, that was for sure, at least where Carly was concerned. She kept up a lively string of conversation. Her father had been a lawman in a number of different towns, so she had seen a lot of sights. The kid had too, so they were able to talk about the places they had been.
How come you never stayed in one place very long, Browning?
I guess I was always just a little too restless by nature. Fiddle-footed, some men call it.
Huh. And what sort of things you worked at? You don't strike me as a cowboy.
It's true. I never got the hang of punching cows, but I've worked on railroads and done some mining.
Interesting. You use the word hang.
What do you mean by that, Dad?
No, nothing. Why don't you step out on the porch with me, Browning, so we can get some air? I can light up this pipe of mine. Carly doesn't like for me to smoke it in the house.
If you'd burn something in it besides that foul-smelling tobacco, I might not mind.
Sure, Marshal. Nice evening.
Yeah, it'll be cold by morning.
More than likely.
You didn't get that reply to your telegram.
Not yet. It could still come in. I told the clerk at the Western Union office I'd be at the hotel after this, so the boy should still be able to find me.
No, I don't suppose you'd like to tell me what business this is about.
Sorry, Marshal. No offense, but I'd rather keep that to myself.
Well, a man who wears a badge likes to know what's going on in his town. And a gunfighter's business usually means trouble.
I never said I was a gunfighter.
You didn't have to. Now, I ask you flat out, Browning, and since you sat at my table and broke bread with me, I expect a straight answer. Did you come to Las Vegas to kill a man?
Absolutely not, Marshal. I don't want any trouble at all.
Yeah, well, that's good to know, anyway. Especially since, well, the girl's taken quite a shine to you and all.
I can set your mind to rest about that, Marshal. The only intention I have toward your daughter is an honorable one, and that's to thank her for a fine meal and some very pleasant company. If you'd like, you can convey those thanks for me, and I'll just get my hat and head on down to the hotel.
No. She'd never forgive either of us if you did that. Wait a spell. You can say your goodnights.
Thanks. I'd like that.
Carly joined them on the porch a few minutes later.
It's a beautiful evening.
Yes, it is. And that was a fine meal you prepared, miss.
Carly.
We'll compromise. Miss Carly.
I suppose that'll do. What are your plans now, Mr. Browning?
Well, that depends on the answer I get to a telegram I sent earlier. I'll be staying in Las Vegas tonight, but I expect I'll be moving along in the morning.
So soon?
I'm afraid so.
Well, I'm glad we were able to keep you here for a little while anyway.
Browning, I'm about to make my evening rounds. How about you come along with me?
I suppose I can do that. I need to find a livery stable for my horse before I check into the hotel.
Well, I can take you right to the best stable in town. Just let me get my hat.
He went back inside the house and closed the door. Carly was standing at the edge of the porch, her hands on the railing that ran around it. But she turned quickly and stepped toward the kid. Before he could stop her, she put her arms around his neck, came up on her toes, and pressed her mouth to his. The kiss took him a little by surprise. Instinctively, his arms went around Carly's slim, supple body. Her lips were warm and sweet, and he was human enough to react favorably to what she was doing. Without thinking about it, he returned the kiss. But only for a moment, and then he reached up and disengaged her arms as gently as he could so that he could step back.
What was that about?
You know good and well what it was about, Mr. Browning. I just wanted you to know what'll be waiting for you if you ever decide to come back to Las Vegas.
You plan on waiting for me?
That's right.
Don't. Just don't.
Why not? Are you spoken for? Do you have a wife somewhere?
Just take my word for it, Carly. You don't want to wait for me. Find some other young man and marry him. Have a good family and a good life.
Well, but I...
You can't have either of those things with me.
All right. If that's the way you feel.
I'm afraid it is.
Good night, Mr. Browning.
Good night.
The front door opened, and Fairmont came out onto the porch again. Carly went back inside and closed the door behind her.
It's getting a little chilly out here sooner than I expected.
He handed the kid his hat.
Miss Carly didn't like what I had to tell her.
I don't need to know about it. Come on, Browning.
After the kid dropped off his horse at the livery stable, he and Fairmont started walking toward the hotel.
Yes, Las Vegas is a nice, peaceful place most of the time. It's had its wild days in the past, but I think it's settled down now for good. I hope so, because I had enough of drifting. I'd like to stay on here as Marshal until I'm ready to take off the badge for good.
I'd say the town would be lucky to have you.
They had completed their circuit of the town and found themselves back at the Marshal's office.
We didn't stop at the hotel.
Oh, blast it, I forgot. Well, let's step in here for a minute, and I'll take you back down there. Well,
I saw where it was. No need for you to come along, Marshal.
Yeah, but there's something in here I want to show you. It's important.
All right, just for a minute. I'm pretty tired.
That's all it'll take.
Fairmont opened the door and led the way inside. A lamp with its wick turned down low burned on the desk. Fairmont went over to it and turned it up so that the yellow glow in the room brightened.
Now I got to thinking that there might be a reward for those bank robbers, and you're entitled to a share of it, Browning. So I had a look through these reward dodgers for them.
I don't want any reward. You can keep all that blood money.
Yeah, but look here. I found those owl hoots.
Fairmont leveled a little pistol that had been hidden under some papers on his desk. The barrel pointed right at the kid's middle.
And I found something else, too. Put your hands up, Morgan. You're under arrest.
You knew all along, didn't you?
That you're wanted for breaking out of prison and murdering some guards over New Mexico territory? I've known ever since I went through these wanted posters and found the one about you. I knew you had to be a gunfighter. I just didn't know you were Kid Morgan.
So you had me to suffer at your house?
Now that was the girl's idea. I was watching you like a hawk the whole time. If you tried anything, you would have been sorry.
I wouldn't have tried anything, Marshal. I told you the truth. I'm not looking for trouble.
Yeah, tell that to those guards you killed. Now unbuckle that gun belt slow and easy and put it on the floor.
I didn't kill any guards. Yes, I broke out of prison, but it was because I was locked up unjustly. I was mistaken for an escaped convict named Ben Bledsoe. The authorities in New Mexico know this. There are no charges against me. Whoever put out those wanted posters made a terrible mistake.
Terrible for you, no doubt. With a price of $10,000 on your head, and dead or alive at that, you're gonna attract a lot of attention. You'd be safer in my cell block than anywhere else, Morgan. Now unbuckle that gun belt and get in there.
Sorry, Marshal. I'm not going to do it.
Damn it. I'll shoot you if I have to.
That's a .32 caliber revolver you got so tricky with. You put a slug in me, it won't knock me down. I'll have plenty of time to get my gun out. You know what that means.
You'd kill a lawman? I thought you said you weren't a murderer.
I said I never killed any prison guards in New Mexico.
Damn it, Morgan! I can't let you walk out of here. Doesn't matter if you did save my life this afternoon, you're a wanted man. It's up to the courts to sort out whether the charges are justified, not me.
That's why I sent the wire, Marshal. It went to my lawyer in San Francisco. If he's given a chance, I'm sure he'll straighten everything out.
You expect me to believe that a drifting gunfighter has a lawyer in San Francisco?
It's true. If you're interested in the $10,000, I can make arrangements to have that amount paid to you.
Now, I'm a lawman. I earn my wages by keeping the peace. I don't collect bounties.
Then you don't have any real reason not to let me go.
Except the fact that you're a fugitive. Now, there's been enough talk. Now, are you going to drop your gun and get in that cell, Morgan, or do I have to pull this trigger?
Take it easy, Marshal.
His hand went to the buckle of his gun belt.
Looks like you've got me.
Fairmont's eyes dropped, following the kid's hands, just as the kid had figured they would. He sprang forward with blinding speed, closing the gap between them before the marshal could pull the trigger. The edge of the kid's left hand slashed sideways against Fairmont's wrist. The .32 caliber bullet hit the front wall, rather than finding his flesh. At the same time, the kid bunched his right fist and drove it forward. The punch landed cleanly on Fairmont's jaw and rocked the lawman's head back. The lawman fell against the desk and knocked the lamp over. Flames shot up as burning kerosene splashed over the papers on the desk. The kid's eyes widened in alarm at the sight of the blaze. He ignored Fairmont for the moment and yanked his hat off, slapping at the flames as he put them out. From the corner of his eye, he saw Fairmont stagger across the room. The marshal caught himself and shook his head as if to clear it. He had dropped the smaller pistol, but clawed at the butt of the long-barreled revolver on his hip and dragged it out of its holster. The kid whirled and flung his charred hat into Fairmont's face as the lawman's gun cleared leather. Instinctively, Fairmont batted the hat away from his eyes, giving the kid time to leap across the room and close his left hand around the cylinder of Fairmont's gun so it couldn't fire. The kid drove his other fist into Fairmont's belly. The marshal doubled over. The kid wrenched the gun out of Fairmont's hand and flung it away behind him. Then he grabbed the front of Fairmont's shirt and jerked him upright.
Sorry, Marshal.
The blow slammed into Fairmont's jaw and put him out. When the kid let go of Fairmont's shirt, the marshal dropped senseless to the floor. Feeling disgusted with himself and the circumstances, the kid turned away. Somebody would be coming to investigate those shots. He needed to get out of Las Vegas, but he hated to leave before he got a reply to his telegram to Claudius Turnbuckle. He would have to get in touch with the lawyer again later, from some other settlement with a telegraph office. He froze as he came around toward the door. It had opened without him being aware of it, as he was struggling with Fairmont. A figure stood there, silhouetted against the light that filtered into the street from other buildings. The kid instantly recognized the slender figure. It belonged to Carly Fairmont, and the gun she held in both hands, pointed at him, belonged to her father.
Dad was right to be suspicious of you. He told me you weren't who you were pretending to be and that I shouldn't get any thoughts in my head about you. But I didn't believe him. I see now I should have.
You've got it all wrong, Carly.
How could I get it wrong? You attacked my father and tried to burn down his office. I heard shots. Did you try to kill him too?
Just put the gun down and step aside. Your father's not hurt bad. You don't know what's going on here.
I know enough. I know you're not going anywhere, Mr. Browning, or whatever your name is. Did you lie about that too?
Carly?
The kid took a step toward her. She pulled the trigger. The bullet whistled past his ear. He lunged forward before Carly could fire again. His arm swept the gun aside and knocked it out of her hands.
Oh!
She tried to get away from him, but he grabbed her so she couldn't retrieve the gun.
Let me go! Let me go!
Blast it! Settle down!
Arms closed around his legs in a clumsy tackle.
Damn you!
The kid tried to kick his way free from Fairmont's grip, but Fairmont wasn't a small man and put all his considerable heft into heaving on the kid's legs. At the same time, Carly planted her hands in the middle of the kid's chest and shoved as hard as she could. The kid suddenly crashed to the floor. Fairmont clambered on top of him.
Get his gun! Get his gun!
He felt Carly pluck the weapon from its holster, but she couldn't use it to shoot at him while he was rolling around on the floor with her father. Instead, she swung the gun at his head. When something exploded against the back of his skull, he knew in a flash of intuition that it was the butt of his own revolver. As the kid became aware of his surroundings, he realized he was lying on a hard, narrow, uncomfortable surface, some sort of cot or bunk. He was positioned on his side, and when he forced his eyes open, he saw a rock wall at close range, only inches away from his face. Turning his head slightly so he could lift his gaze along the wall, he wasn't surprised to see a small barred window set into it. He was in jail, just as he expected. The light in the cell was dim. The kid rolled onto his back and looked the other way. The heavy door between the cell block and the marshal's office stood open, and light came from the lamp burning in the office. From across the aisle that divided the cell block into two sets of matching cells, the kid saw the outlaw who had survived the failed bank robbery. The kid rolled onto his other side so he could swing his legs off the bunk attached to the wall and sit up. As he did so, his senses whirled around crazily for a minute. He felt sick. He sat there until he felt steadier, and the feeling soon passed. When he was confident he wouldn't fall down, he stood up and walked over to the cell door, which was made up completely of iron bars.
Marshal! Marshal Fairmont, are you out there?
Fairmont appeared in the doorway.
I thought I heard somebody stirring around back here. You're awake, are you, Morgan?
You can see that for yourself. I tell you again, you're making a mistake, Marshal.
Not according to that reward poster. But if you're right and it's wrong, then I suppose I'll owe you an apology. Now, it's not up to me to sort that out, though. I've sent a wire to the New Mexico Territorial Authorities in Santa Fe advising them that I have you under arrest and asking them what they want me to do with you.
For what it's worth, I'm sorry I had to lie to you, Marshal.
Yeah, you see, that's the one reason I had my doubts about you. If you're telling the truth about not being wanted, why did you lie to me about your name?
Think about it, Marshal. You're not the only one who's seen that wanted poster.
Quickly, the kid told Fairmont about his two encounters with bounty hunters in the mountains west of Las Vegas and the narrow escapes he'd had. There was no longer any point in concealing any of that information.
So when I rode back into town, all I wanted to do was send that wire to my lawyer, wait for his response, and then get out again without anybody paying any attention to me. And then those four robbers came running out of the bank.
I reckon you did save my life. But then you lied to me. And you made it worse by coming to my house and continuing to lie to me. In my book, that goes a long way towards evening things out.
If I had told you the truth, then, would you have believed me?
Well...
No. You'd have believed what you saw on that wanted poster.
Yeah, more than likely.
So you see, all I was trying to do was save you some trouble.
Now, you can look at it that way if you want. To me, it seems like you were just trying to avoid being locked up again.
Locked up unjustly. For the second time.
Now that's for somebody else to sort out, not me. Now I'm sure if you really have that fancy lawyer in San Francisco you keep talking about, you'll be able to get to the bottom of things.
You don't believe me about the lawyer either, do you?
Right now, I'm not sure I'd believe anything that comes out of your mouth, Morgan.
Guess I might as well get some sleep then.
Yeah, especially if it means that you'll shut up so the rest of us can get some sleep.
Fairmont spent the night in the marshal's office, explaining that he didn't feel comfortable leaving when he had a couple of prisoners. But when the kid woke up in the morning after a few hours of fitful sleep, Fairmont was gone. He'd probably headed home for a little breakfast and maybe a little rest, the kid thought. The office wasn't deserted for long. He heard the front door open, Then, a moment later, a key rattled in the lock of the cell block door. It swung open to reveal Carly standing there.
I brought breakfast for the two of you.
The kid stood up and went to the bars. He leaned against them and gave her a sardonic smile.
What? Why are you looking at me like that, Mr. Browning? I mean, Mr. Morgan.
Why not just call me Kid? I was just thinking that you don't look like the sort of woman who'd try to bash a man's head in with a pistol.
You're lucky I didn't shoot you after what you did to my father.
Luck had nothing to do with it. You tried to shoot me, remember? If I hadn't been fast enough to get out of the way of the bullet, I'd be dead right now.
And good riddance. Dad said you killed a couple prison guards down in New Mexico territory.
That's what the wanted poster says. It's not true.
If it's not, I'm sure you'll have your chance in court to prove it.
She turned away from the door and came back a moment later, carrying a tray with a plate of hotcakes, bacon, and eggs on it.
For now, you get your breakfast.
She passed the tray to the kid through the narrow opening in the barred door designed for that.
Hey, what about me?
I have your breakfast too, just a minute. There's coffee on the stove. I'll get cups.
As she turned back toward the office, the front door opened, and a boy about 12 years old came in. He wore overalls and a cap, which, when he saw Carly standing there, he tugged off to reveal a mop of flaming red hair.
Howdy, Miss Fairmont. Cyrus down at the telegraph office sent me to look for that Mr. Browning fella who stopped the bank robbery yesterday. Said he'd probably be at the hotel, but they ain't seen him. I figured I'd ask your pa. Is he here?
No, he's not, Davy. But I know where Mr. Browning is. If you'll give me the message, I'll see that he gets it.
Well, I don't know. Cyrus said to give it straight to Mr. Browning.
The kid set the breakfast tray on the bunk and stepped quickly to the bars, thrusting an arm out between them.
That message you have is for me, son.
The boy stepped closer to the cell block, his eyes widening as he peered into the cell and recognized the kid.
Golly! You are him!
That's right. That telegram is addressed to me.
Davy took an envelope from the pocket of his overalls and squinted at it.
The name on here is Conrad Browning.
That's my real name.
Miss Fairmont?
He's the one who sent a wire to San Francisco. I suppose he has a right to see the reply.
Thanks.
All right.
Davy advanced hesitantly and held out the envelope to the kid.
How come you're in here, Mr. Browning?
It's a long story. And a big mistake.
He felt in his pockets to see if Fairmont had left him any money. Finding a silver dollar, he handed it to Davy and took the envelope.
Well, thanks.
Run along now, Davy.
You bet.
He dashed out of the marshal's office, no doubt on his way to the general store to convert that dollar to licorice whips, or maybe a pocket knife. The kid stood in the cell, paying no attention to Carly or the bank robber in the cell across the aisle. He ripped the envelope open, eager to see what Claudius Turnbuckle had to say. The terse words hit him like a hard punch in the gut. Reward genuine, stop. Territorial governor refuses to drop charges, stop. Going Santa Fe to straighten out mess. Turnbuckle. The kid sank slowly onto the bunk as he tried to absorb the message.
Bad news?
Bad enough.
The kid crumpled the telegram into a ball and tossed it out through the bars.
See for yourself.
She hesitated for a second before picking up the paper, smoothing it out, and reading what was printed on it.
Who's Turnbuckle?
Claudius Turnbuckle, my lawyer. One of the partners in the firm Turnbuckle and Stafford.
He says he's on his way to Santa Fe.
Yes, and I have no doubt he'll get everything straightened out like he says. But how long is that going to take? In the meantime, I have to stay here, penned up in this cell.
Well, for heaven's sakes, it's not all that bad. I happen to know you have a perfectly fine breakfast there. I fix the meals for the prisoners, and I'm a good cook.
That's a fact.
I'm sure it'll be boring, but if you're telling the truth, in the long run, you don't have anything to worry about. You'll be exonerated and released. You'll have some lost time, that's all. Unless you were on your way somewhere in a hurry, there shouldn't be a big problem.
No, I wasn't on my way anywhere, in a hurry or otherwise.
Well, there you go. It's just an inconvenience, that's all. You'll be well treated. Consider it just a chance to rest.
Marshal Fairmont returned to the jail at mid-morning. He came into the cell block.
Carly tells me you got a telegram from somebody in San Francisco.
My lawyer.
Well, I just had the feller's name signed to it. There's nothing on it that actually said he was a lawyer.
You're determined that I'm not telling the truth, aren't you?
She's starting to feel a little bad that she came near to shooting you and then clouded you over the head. She's worried that maybe you didn't deserve it.
What did you tell her?
That until I see proof otherwise, to me, you're just another owl hoot on a dodge.
In other words, I'm guilty until proven innocent.
It's not like that, and you know it.
That's the way it sounds to me.
I'm just doing my job here. If you don't like it, that's too damn bad.
The bank robber spoke up from the other cell.
What about me? What are you going to do with me, Marshal?
Now that's a lot simpler. A circuit judge will be through here in a couple of weeks. You'll be charged with bank robbery and attempted murder, and I expect you'll be on your way to prison shortly thereafter. It's lucky for you nobody except your partners got killed while all the lead was flying around, or you'd be facing the gallows, son.
The man looked down at the floor. He didn't ask any more questions. The rest of the day passed quietly and uneventfully. It was boring, all right, just as Carly had predicted it would be. But the thick stone walls of the jail retained a little of the coolness from the morning, so as the day heated up, it didn't become too unbearable inside the cells. Carly brought sandwiches made from the leftover roast beef for lunch and stew for supper. After delivering the evening meal, she hesitated outside the cells, and the kid could tell by looking at her that she had something on her mind.
What's wrong?
I've been thinking about it all day. What if I was wrong about you? Growing up, with a lawman for a father, I saw a lot of outlaws, and you don't seem like the type to me, Mr. Morgan. Most of them were uneducated louts.
She glanced over her shoulder at the man in the other cell.
Oh, no offense.
Oh, none taken, Missy. I'll be the first one to tell you I never had much schooling.
Carly turned back to the kid.
Anyway, I've been worried about that. I hate to see any man locked up who doesn't deserve it.
What about that wanted poster? According to the wire from Claudius, the territorial authorities in New Mexico meant to issue it and refused to retract it.
Maybe they don't know the full story of what happened.
They ought to know. The warden's daughter was going to testify that I was locked up by mistake.
I just have a feeling that there's been a mistake made somewhere, and I'm afraid I may be the one who made it.
The other prisoner grinned at the kid from across the aisle.
Now that gal's gone sweet on you, Morgan. You play up to her, she just might let you out of here.
Didn't seem much like it last night when she was trying to stove my head in with a gun butt.
Oh, hell, you can't go by that. I've had gals try to shoot me and stab me and even bust my skull with a piece of cordwood, but they still loved me. It's because I'm such a roguish bastard. The gals just can't resist me.
Then maybe you're the one who should be playing up to Miss Fairmont.
No, not this one. She's got her eyes set on you.
I think you're wrong.
Can't hurt to try. Worst she can do is slap you across the mush.
The kid stretched out and turned his face to the stone wall. He didn't want to think about what the bank robber had said. In the first place, he wasn't convinced Carly was smitten with him. And in the second, he wasn't sure he could play up to any woman anymore. Conrad Browning had been quite the ladies' man in his time, leaving a string of broken hearts behind him. But those days were long gone. Carly was right. What he needed to do was just be patient. He had faith in Claudius Turnbuckle's legal skill. And Marshall Fairmont had been right, too. With that $10,000 price on his head, he was probably safer in jail, for the time being, than he would be anywhere else. Five hard-faced men rode into Las Vegas a little after sundown that evening. They headed for the Nugget Saloon, which was the biggest and best of the four saloons in town. They left their mounts at the hitch rail in front and went inside. The man who carried himself like their leader wore black boots, black whipcord trousers, and a black vest over a dark red shirt. A black Stetson with a tightly curled brim was thumbed back on a rumpled thatch of prematurely white hair above his tanned, angular face. He stepped up to the bar and rested his left hand on the hardwood. The right stayed close to the pearl-handled butt of the revolver holstered on his hip.
Whiskey. That goes for my friends, too.
Sure thing, mister.
The barkeeper turned and reached for a bottle sitting on the back bar.
Not that swill. We'll be needing something better than that.
The bartender nodded a little nervously and reached under the bar.
Well, of course, sir.
He fetched out a different bottle, unwrapped the seal from around its neck, and set glasses on the hardwood. As he studied the five men without being too obvious about it, He wished they had picked one of the other saloons in town to do their drinking. Standing next to the white-haired leader was a thick-bodied man with a drooping walrus mustache of a muddy shade. To his left was a tall, skinny man with a patchy beard that tried to cover up his weak chin and prominent Adam's apple, but failed. The fourth man was either a Mexican or a breed and really shouldn't have been drinking, but the bartender wasn't going to argue with anybody who had such an evil face. That left the medium-sized gray-haired man in black, who looked like a preacher, but only if a preacher carried two guns, butt forward under his coat, ready for a cross-draw. His expression was mild, but something about the look in his eyes made the bartender shudder. The white-haired man tossed back his drink.
Any strangers riding into town lately?
Besides you fellas, you mean?
I don't think I'd be asking about us. Do you?
No, I reckon not. People come and go in Las Vegas all the time. It's hard to remember them all. Unless something happens that makes you remember them, like that bank robbery yesterday.
Bank robbery?
Yeah, well, attempted bank robbery, I guess you could say, since the varmints didn't get away with any loot. Shucks, none of them got away, period. Three of them are dead, and the fourth is locked up in Marshall Fairmont's jail thanks to that stranger.
What stranger?
He said his name was Browning at first. He helped the marshal stop that robbery. And Henry Bennett over at the bank, he was going to pay him for whatever expenses the fella had while he stayed here in town. But then, Marshal Fairmont figured out he's really some gunfighter and outlaw called Kid Morgan who's wanted over in New Mexico territory. So he locked him up. I bet he hated to do it since Morgan helped him. Maybe even saved his life, but, well, the law is the law, you know.
Yeah, I know. So this Kid Morgan is still locked up in the jail?
Yep. I don't know what the marshal plans to do with him, though. Maybe New Mexico sending somebody to take him back there.
That's mighty interesting.
Oh, you want me to refill those drinks?
No, thanks.
The bartender walked away, leaving the group alone.
That's mighty provincial. The kid dropping into our laps like this pronto. What are we gonna do about it?
The only thing we can. We're gonna break him out and then kill him. Those posters said he was wanted dead or alive, after all.
The kid was dozing on his bunk when the front door of the office slammed like somebody had left in a hurry. The kid sat up on the bunk and frowned. From the sound of it, Carly had come to the marshal's office to bring her father some sort of urgent summons. Trouble must have cropped up somewhere in Las Vegas. The key rattled in the cell block door. It swung open, and the kid saw Carly's slender figure silhouetted against the light in the office. She went quickly into the cell block. The kid came to his feet and grasped the bars.
What's wrong?
Carly clutched the marshal's big key ring in her hand. She pushed a key into the lock on the kid's cell.
I'm letting you out of here.
Hold on a minute. What's going on here?
I sent some telegrams of my own. I wired Turnbuckle and Stafford in San Francisco and asked if a man named Browning was one of their clients. I also sent a message to a friend of mine in Denver and asked her to check with the newspapers there and see if she could find out anything about Conrad Browning.
I guess you must have gotten some replies.
That's right. My God, what terrible things have happened to you. To lose your wife like that. And then to have everyone believe that you were dead.
That was my choice. I wanted people to think that Conrad Browning was dead, especially the men who murdered my wife.
Anyway, I'm convinced those wanted posters are just another terrible mistake, like you said. I knew you couldn't be a bad man.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. You don't know all the things I've done. But I never murdered any prison guards, in New Mexico or anywhere else, and the only reason I broke out of Hellgate was to try to clear my name.
Carly turned the key.
That's why I'm turning you loose, so you can clear your name. I told my father some story about being up at the store when I saw a fight about to break out between some cowboys, and he went to see about it. You have to hurry. He'll be back soon.
She swung the door open, but the kid didn't step out.
What happened to just waiting here until Turnbuckle proves I'm innocent?
Well, that was before I knew about everything you've gone through. I wasn't sure you could stand being locked up.
I appreciate the sentiment. I really do. But I don't want to get you in trouble with your father. I can stand staying here, as long as you keep providing the meals, that is.
You're not going to escape.
Oh, I will! Oh, you can unlock this door, and I'll thank you mighty kindly, ma'am.
Forget it. You go back out in the office, Carly. Take the keys with you. We'll forget this happened, and the marshal doesn't have to know about it.
But, kid!
This isn't right, and you know it.
The kid expected to see Marshal Fairmont standing there, and Carly probably did too. But instead, a man the kid had never seen before strode into the office. He had white hair and was dressed all in black, except for a red shirt under his vest. He stopped short as he looked through the open cell block door and saw Carly standing in front of the kid's open cell.
Well, this is mighty handy.
Then his hand dipped and came up with a pearl-handled Colt, drawn smoothly from the black holster on his hip.
Kid?
Oh, crap. That's Pronto Pike.
Pike came across the office, the gun level and rock steady in his hand.
Back away from that cell, miss.
What do you want?
I want that prisoner. I was just going to talk to the marshal and get the lay of the land, but I won't pass up a chance like this. Step back out of the way.
Do what he says, Carly.
But what about you?
Don't worry about me. You wanted me to escape, remember?
Not like this. That's Pronto Pike, kid. He's a bounty hunter. And from what I've heard, he never takes his prisoners in alive.
Shut up.
Pike advanced into the cell block. His gaze was fastened on the kid.
You're Kid Morgan, the man who's worth 10 grand. I recognize you from the description on those wanted posters. When some stupid bartender told me you were locked up in here, I wasn't sure whether to believe him. But it's true. You must not be much of an outlaw to let a two-bit marshal in a backwater town like this lock you up, kid.
It's all a mistake. You'll never collect that reward because there are no real charges against me.
Territory of New Mexico says different. Come on the rest of the way out of that cell, Morgan. You're leaving with me.
Carly moved to get between the kid and Pike as she spoke.
No, you can't!
Pike moved like a striking snake, lashing out with his left arm and backhanding her across the face.
Oh!
She fell across the aisle and came up against the bars of the bank robber's cell. The kid was about to lunge forward, but before he could, Pike leaped back and leveled the gun again.
Come on, Morgan. Dead or alive, it doesn't matter to me.
The kid froze, knowing the trigger of Pike's gun needed just a hair more pressure on it to make it go off. He might have risked the jump anyway, if a burst of gunfire hadn't sounded outside in the street just then. Pike's head jerked toward the blistering racket, giving the kid his chance. He plunged forward and slashed his left arm at Pike's gun. The kid had knocked the barrel offline just enough to send the slug burning across his left side instead of burying itself in his body. The kid crashed into Pike, knocking the bounty hunter off his feet. The kid grabbed the wrist of Pike's gun hand and rammed it against the floor. At the same time, he hooked a hard right into Pike's chin. The blow bounced the back of Pike's head off the floorboards. The bounty hunter went limp. He might not be out cold, but at least he was stunned. The shooting was still going on in the street outside. The kid snatched Pike's gun from the bounty hunter's fingers and surged to his feet.
Kid, my father's out there somewhere.
Stay here.
He hurried out of the cell block. The kid looked around and spotted his gun belt hanging on a peg on the wall next to the cabinet that held Fairmont's shotgun and a couple of Winchesters. He set Pike's gun on the desk while he took down the belt and buckled it on. He picked up Pike's gun with his left hand and used his right to draw his own Colt. He was ready for whatever trouble might be out there, but not for the trouble that was going on in the jail. The kid whirled around. He saw that Pike had made it back to his feet and grabbed the young woman. As Pike stood in the aisles between the cells, he had his left arm looped around her neck, pressing up so that the skin of her throat was drawn taut. His right hand held a knife to that tight-drawn skin, and he glared over her shoulder at the kid.
Drop those guns, Morgan, or I'll cut her throat.
Pike backed away, maintaining his grip on Carly. Suddenly, the bank robber reached through the bars and grabbed Pike's right arm, jerking the knife away from Carly's throat. At the same time, he caught hold of Pike's shirt collar and jerked him back hard. Pike's head hit against the iron bars. The impact was enough to unhinge his knees and make him collapse. Carly pulled free of Pike and stumbled toward the kid. He holstered his Colt and took her arm.
Go out the back door. You can't stay in here with Pike.
But my dad!
I'll find him.
He gave her a push toward the door that opened into the alley behind the jail. As Carly stumbled toward safety, the kid drew his gun again and turned toward the front door, glancing into the cell block at Pike's senseless form as he did so.
Go on, kid. I'll keep an eye on this one.
Jerking his head in a curt nod of thanks, the kid went to the front door. It stood ajar several inches. He hooked the toe of his boot in the gap, threw the door open, and went out fast and low in a gunfighter's crouch. His gaze darted rapidly from side to side. The street had cleared in a hurry as people hunted for cover when the shooting started, so it wasn't hard to locate the source of the shots. Several men had ducked behind a wagon parked to the kid's left. They were firing at somebody who had taken shelter in the alcove of a store down the block. One of the men behind the wagon caught sight of the kid.
That ain't Pronto! It's Morgan!
Get him!
So Pike had partners, just as the kid supposed. The man in the alcove was probably Marshal Fairmont. That was all the kid had time to think about before bullets started whizzing around his head. He threw himself off the boardwalk in a dive that landed him behind a water trough. Rolling onto his belly, he made himself as small a target as possible and edged one eye and the barrel of his Colt around the corner of the trough. The wagon was about 20 feet away from him. He could see the legs of the men who had taken cover behind it. The kid opened fire. The kid heard a shotgun blast from inside the jail, just as he saw one of the men behind the wagon go down, howling in pain. The kid's bullets had cut the man's legs out from under him. If Pike had fired the greener, the kid knew he'd soon be facing an even greater threat. He twisted on the ground and brought up both revolvers as Pike charged out of the marshal's office with the shotgun in his hands. The kid pulled both triggers. One of the bullets struck the underside of the twin barrels right where the breech joined them. The impact wrenched the weapon up and drove it out of Pike's hands. The shotgun hit Pike in the face and knocked him back through the door.
Son of a bitch!
Pronto's down! Gomez is here too! We better get out of here!
Covering their retreat, the men headed for some horses tied at a nearby hitch rail. One of them helped the wounded man limp along as fast as he could. The kid knew he couldn't stop them by himself, and the marshal's gun had fallen silent. Fairmont might be wounded, or worse. Keeping one eye on the door of the marshal's office in case Pike reappeared, the kid thumbed fresh cartridges into his guns. The fleeing bounty hunters reached their horses and piled into the saddles. Still shooting, they took off down the street. The kid risked a look, and to his surprise, he saw a figure leap out of an alley and intercept them.
Give me a hand!
The kid recognized Pronto Pike's voice. After having the greener shot out of his hands, Pike realized luck wasn't on his side. He'd run out of the jail through the open back door and along the alley until he caught up with his partners as they tried to light a shuck out of Las Vegas. One of the riders reached down and snagged the wrist of Pike's upthrust hand. The man slowed just enough to haul Pike up onto the back of the horse behind the saddle. Digging in his spurs, he sent his mount racing after the others as Pike hung on for dear life. The kid could have thrown a few bullets after them, but didn't see any point since they were already getting out of town as fast as they could. Besides, he was more worried about Marshal Fairmont. He scrambled to his feet and ran toward the alcove.
Hold your fire, Marshal. It's me, Morgan.
No shots came from the alcove. When the kid reached it, he saw the figure slumped in the shadows. Biting back a curse, he dropped to a knee.
Marshal, can you hear me?
Morgan? Is that you?
Yeah. How bad are you hit?
Oh, bastards. Shot a leg out from under me.
The kid tucked Pike's pearl-handled gun behind his belt and reached down to feel along Fairmont's legs. He found a bloody patch on the right one, on the outside of the thigh.
Doesn't feel like it's too bad. Probably just a deep crease, enough to knock you down and make you lose some blood. But if the bone's not broken, I think you'll be all right.
What are you doing out of your cell?
It's a long story. We'll worry about that later. Right now, we need to get you some help.
He wrapped his free arm around Fairmont and lifted the marshal to his feet. They had taken a couple of unsteady steps toward the jail when the sound of hoofbeats made the kid jerk his head around. It was only two horses, and someone was leading one, not riding it. The kid felt a shock of surprise go through him as he recognized his own buckskin. The person holding the reins was Carly Fairmont.
Kid! Kid, I brought your horse from the livery stable. Take him and get out of here.
But your father...
She stepped up onto the boardwalk and held out the reins toward him.
I'll take care of Dad. You can't stay here. You saw what happened tonight. Other bounty hunters are liable to show up and try to take you. Man will risk anything for that much money. You have to leave and clear your name.
The kid knew she was right. Pike and his men might return. Other bounty hunters might hear that he was locked up in Las Vegas' jail and come for him. It was too dangerous for him to stay there, especially with Fairmont already wounded.
He's got a bullet through the leg.
The kid took the buckskin's reins from her and helped her get her arm around the marshal.
He'll be all right, but he needs a doctor.
I'll take care of him. I'm sorry all this happened, kid. Mr. Browning.
Leave it at kid. Thanks, Carly.
Carly, don't... Don't help this prisoner get away.
I have to, Dad. He's not a murderer. I know it.
Oh, blast it! It's... Oh, It's not right. It's not the law.
Sorry, Marshal.
The kid stepped down from the boardwalk, put his foot in his stirrup, and swung up onto the buckskin's back.
But this is better for everybody.
He wheeled the horse around and sent it galloping out of Las Vegas without looking back. He hoped Fairmont wouldn't stay mad at Carly too long for helping him. It was the best way, and once the marshal thought about that, he might see it too. As he rode through the night with the wind in his face, the kid thought about what he would do next. One thing was certain, no matter where he went, he would be in great danger, as long as those wanted posters with his name and description and the $10,000 price on his head were circulating. Claudius Turnbuckle's wire had said he was going to Santa Fe to straighten everything out. That was where the true problem lay, and that was where the solution would be found as well. As he thought about it, his path seemed clear. He would pick up that big black horse he had left hidden outside the settlement and head for New Mexico territory, to whatever fate awaited him in Santa Fe. Several days later, the kid was in northern Arizona, near the Grand Canyon of the Colorado River. He had heard of the magnificent canyon, but had never been there. Although he was tempted to detour to the north and have a look at it, having circled south of the imposing natural landmark, he didn't want to take the time to do so. Since leaving Las Vegas, nobody had tried to kill him, but the kid knew better than to believe his luck would last. He was riding the black through hills covered with a thick pine forest and leading the buckskin. Flagstaff was somewhere to the south of him, but he intended to avoid the town, as he had avoided other settlements on his journey. He didn't want to run the risk of being recognized by another small-town lawman who might try to lock him up. His plan was to steer clear of civilization as much as possible until he reached Santa Fe. By the time he got there, Claudius Turnbuckle ought to have reached the territorial capital too. The kid would get in touch with him somehow and find out if the lawyer had been successful in quashing the charges against him. He didn't relish the idea of spending the rest of his life as a fugitive, but he liked the thought of being locked up even less. Once the sun set, night fell quickly amidst the towering trees. As dusk settled down, the kid found a clearing at the base of a rocky bluff that would make a suitable campsite. A spring trickled from the stone wall and formed a small pool of clear, cold water. There was plenty of grass for the horses, and the kid thought that the trees were thick enough that he could risk a small fire to cook some of the supplies that Carly had stuffed in his saddlebags before she brought the buckskin to him. Eventually, he would have to pick up more provisions from a small hamlet or isolated trading post, but he had enough to last a couple more days. The nights got cold at that elevation, so after his meager supper, the kid was glad he had his coat as he hunkered next to the tiny fire he'd built. He held out his hands toward the flames to catch what little warmth they gave off. He had ridden out of Las Vegas without his hat. When he stopped for supplies, he would see if he could find another one similar to it. A man got used to wearing a hat and felt a little naked without one. The same thing was true of a gun. At least it was for men like the kid. He had guns. His own Colt, the pearl-handled revolver he had taken from Pronto Pike, which was tucked away in one of his saddlebags, the Winchester, and the heavy Sharps carbine he normally carried, along with a good supply of ammunition for all of them. Some might say he was armed for bear. Not that he expected to encounter one. For the kid, packing that much iron was just the usual state of things. The buckskin pricked up his ears, and a second later, so did the black. The kid noted the horse's reactions and frowned. He was still nursing the last of the coffee in his tin cup. He set it aside and came to his feet. Moving over to the buckskin, he stroked the horse's shoulder.
You hear something, fella? Maybe smell something?
But the way the horse lifted his head and looked into the thick shadows under the trees, the kid knew something was out there. A mountain lion, maybe. Horses and mountain lions were mortal enemies. The same was true of wolves. The kid bent over and reached for the Winchester from where he had leaned both of his long guns against one of the saddles on the ground. As he closed his hand around it, a swift-moving shape leaped out of the darkness at him, teeth bared in a snarl. The kid snatched the rifle up quickly, so the beast's teeth closed on the barrel, not on his flesh. The next second, the animal's weight slammed into him and knocked him off his feet. As he fell, he grabbed hold of the thick, shaggy coat and hung on. In the firelight, he saw that the creature struggling to sink its fangs into him wasn't a mountain lion or a wolf or even a bear. It was a dog, and he would have sworn it was the same dog he had tossed off that rock slab more than a week earlier when he encountered that gang of bounty hunters. He had his left hand on the dog's throat, holding off the teeth, and he still clutched the Winchester in his right. He raised the rifle and brought the butt smashing down on the dog's head. The blow stunned the dog and gave the kid time to throw the animal off and roll to the side. He came to his feet in a blur of speed and brought the Winchester to his shoulder, the barrel lined on the dog, which had regained its feet and was gathering itself for another spring.
You pull that trigger, mister, and I'll kill you.
The kid's finger froze on the Winchester's trigger.
Hold, Max.
The dog settled down on its haunches, but still looked like he wanted to tear the kid's throat out and gnaw on his bones.
Put the rifle on the ground.
How do I know you've even got a gun?
That a good enough answer for you?
Yeah, I suppose so.